Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mock Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Friday. It is the 26th of February. That means, I don't want to freak anybody out, but that means March is just around the corner. Coming back for a second lap, depending who you talk to. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, I just thought of this like literally 10 seconds ago. Welcome to Secura Friday.
Hey, I like it. It is, in fact, Security Friday. And we are here to give you news and updates on previous news and practical tips for stuff you can do to sort of up your level of security. So, Andrew, what do we have as the first item of business? I guess if we did this like a regular meeting, we'd start with old business, right?
Yes. So here is the old business that we can finally do some more announcing on.
Okay.
So as we all know, with iOS 14, Apple added those App Store privacy labels, mm-hmm. which developers will be adding these to their App Store page. So when you scroll down, like near the bottom, past reviews, and they have to label what kind of data their apps collect from you, if any, if that data is linked to your identity, and if that data is shared with third parties, like maybe advertisers. And there's a lot of news over the holiday season because the deadline, like Apple gave developers plenty of time to, you know, do this and add this to their apps and figure mm-hmm. out what's going on, what do they need to do. And the deadline for that was, December 8th,
yeah.
2020. Now, there's a lot of hubbub about that because Google was kind of late to the scene. As I kind of quipped in a previous article I had written, even Facebook added their labels before Google did.
That's true. But we did cut them some slack at first mm-hmm. with, I think Brian called it Orr's Law, which was that don't ascribe to, you know, malice or shady behavior what can be explained by Christmas vacations. So, like, but we gave them a long time.
Yeah. Like in the beginning, that's what I thought. I thought, well, you know, it's the holidays, like nobody is going to be doing this at Google. But as time went on, then it started to seem weird. But the final update, or at least the first update, is that there are two Google apps now that do have these labels. The first one was YouTube, and I actually don't know when that was added. But the news this week is that Google has added these labels to Gmail. And in my screenshot that I linked, it says some of the data linked to people include, you know, purchases, contact info, user content, location, contacts, search history, usage data. I mean, if you've been using Google for a while and you know that they give you free products as kind of a trade for your data, mm-hmm. this shouldn't be surprising to you.
Yeah.
Just that, you know, there's so many in the data linked to you section.
Yeah, and that's the part. And remember, again, these are what we have been led to believe is that these are not enforced. So there's nobody at Apple checking to make sure that these are the things that actually are being asked for or whatever. Even if Apple is reviewing them, they're not being enforced. Now, I would tend to believe that it's possible your Firefox, your Google, your bigger companies, your Facebooks, when they put those in, I think those are probably getting scrutinized a little bit more heavily than the game that says, like, we don't save any of your information. So fingers crossed that there's, like, actually, you know, a little bit of attention being paid. Anyway, so that finally happened, which, you know, December 8th until the end of February is kind of a long time. But hello and welcome. So took you long enough, Google.
Yeah, welcome to the party.
But we're glad you're here. So in interesting news, We have an interesting bug that actually resulted in a payout that we got to hear about. A lot of times we just sort of get to hear this was published or this has been resolved or something, but not always. And the person got paid for it.
Yes. So security researcher Vishal Barad, he wrote about what's called a stored XSS bug, and he discovered it in iCloud using the cloud versions of Pages and Keynote on iCloud.com. He disclosed this bug to Apple on August 7th, and he was awarded $5,000 for it. So good for him.
Yeah.
So just to give a very top-level basic explanation for this, XSS is cross-site scripting, and it's a type of attack someone can do where they find some way to what's called injecting some kind of a malicious script into a website to maybe do some kind of funny things with the database, such as maybe doing some kind of code or programming in a web form, for example. And a stored SSS bug means that code isn't a one-time thing. It's persistent, and it can be used to attack and affect other visitors to that website. And so that's what happened with this person. I mean, he's a security researcher. He did this, you know, he's not actually doing it to attack people. But he says it was found within the Pages and Keynote apps. And he says that an attacker could trigger this flaw by creating new content with either of these apps using some kind of XSS code. And then it could be saved and shared with another iCloud user. Once it's been shared, the attacker would have to change the content in some way, save it again, and then visit settings and browse all versions, which would somehow be able to activate that code. And he did create a proof of concept video to demonstrate this is actually happening. So that's filed under very interesting.
Yeah. And also because, like I said, he got paid, and we don't always hear, when people get paid for that stuff. So, and it was, $5,000, I believe.
$5,000,
that he got for that. So yeah. And, Andrew's, article about this, there's a link to it in the show notes. It has a proof of concept to show like what you could use this to actually do on somebody's machine. So it was interesting to see that in action. So we've talked about nothing but the web so far. So we might as well continue and talk about a new way that Firefox is handling cookies.
So this is pretty cool. Firefox was recently updated to version 86, and among other things, 86. Among other things, it introduces something called total cookie protection. And to me, it's kind of sounding like what Safari does with intelligent tracking prevention or something else that they were doing. So what they say is that total cookie protection works by maintaining a separate cookie jar for each website you visit. And anytime a website or third-party content, which is embedded in that website, deposits a cookie in that browser, that cookie is confined to the data jar assigned to that website, and it can't be shared with other websites like third parties.
Well, that's clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that idea.
And it sounds similar to a feature that they already had. I think they mentioned this in their blog post, where it's some kind of sandboxing feature. So it sounds like there's a different sandbox for that website per browser tab, and nothing can escape that browser tab. I think that's how I understood it.
Yeah. That was sort of my understanding of it as well, that each one of these is only limited to its own website, so it can't really do anything else. So that seems, again, that seems pretty useful, because it's not like you're not admitting, and it's, you know, it's allowing everything to work the way it's supposed to, because, you know, so much stuff relies on there being cookies now. So you can have that without having to give up all of that information to all the other websites that you visit. So I thought that was kind of a handy idea.
So this isn't just all cookies, because there are some cookies that are actually good. Mm-hmm. And Total Cookie Protection is smart enough to be able to separate those. So it says they make a limited exception for cross-site cookies when they are needed for non-tracking purposes, such as a cookie used by popular third-party login providers.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, because some cookies are good, like that one. So that's a nice way to do it. Cool. So since we've kind of decided that it's like security on the web Friday, we're going to move on to our practical tip. And our practical tip this week is basically a question, I think. Do you know that there's a browser other than the one that you're running that might do all the stuff that you need and actually keep your stuff more secure?
Mm-hmm.
So that seems like kind of where we're at. On my computer, I have Firefox, and I also have Chrome, because there are certain sites that only want to work at Chrome. I do, you know, or like you'll load something in Safari and it'll say, yeah, you know, actually you should really be doing this in Chrome, because either, it'll say we don't support your browser, or it'll say like it won't load properly, or it'll, you know, it might just flat out tell you like, no, this isn't Chrome. This isn't happening. So there are a number of browsers out there that you can use, and this is the part that I think is why we're discussing it, which is Chrome from Google uses an engine called Chromium in order to display all those web pages. And if you use Safari, that's awesome too. So the engine that Safari uses to display web pages to you is called WebKit. And WebKit and Chromium are different things. They do stuff differently. And so sometimes you will need something that requires Chrome, or, you know, a Chrome equivalent, I suppose we should call it. And there are some out there. So if you need Chrome, but don't need, if you need, you know, what Chrome can do for you, but you don't need any of the Google for it, you do have some choices. So Microsoft Edge is one of those. Microsoft Edge is completely powered by the Chromium engine, just like Chrome, but it's from Microsoft. I present that without comment. Do with that information what you will. I know a number of people who use it who say that it's very solid, and one of the things that they appreciate about it is that there's no Chrome, but also apparently it's very fast because it's not doing all of the Google stuff that all of the Google transactions and pestering you about constant updates and wanting you to sign in if you're not signed in and all that kind of stuff. So that's one of the nice things about using Edge anyway. And like I said, I know a number of people who have used it and really enjoy it. So that's a good one. Andrew, what's your go-to browser?
So I wouldn't say I've used a wide variety. I, like you, I have, well, I don't have Chrome, but I do have Firefox. I usually use Safari. Mm-hmm. But like you said, sometimes I'll be trying to do something in Safari and I'll just get a blank page.
Yep.
And then when I open it in Firefox, that's it displays. I used to use, back in the day, Opera. And I think they're still around. Yeah. So Opera is a good one. I don't know what browser engine they use, though. There is another one we were talking about is Vivaldi.
Yeah.
And Vivaldi seems to be recommended, I've seen, in the privacy circles.
Yeah. It's got a lot of attractive features, and it's actively a browser that goes after people who are very invested in privacy, and they're doing the same thing a lot of, you know, a lot of other sorts of services are doing, where they want to strike a balance between your data being private and, you know, and controlled, but still getting to have a good experience on the web. So Vivaldi does that. And I did look while you were typing that. Opera is still around, and opera is also Chromium based. It's one of the oldest.
Oh, okay.
It came out in April of 1995.
Wow. So, I didn't know that old.
Oh, it's old. Opera is around and also a Chromium browser. So again, if there's something that you're looking for, trying to do, and Safari doesn't do it, you can do it. You can probably do it with Opera. Yeah.
And then one last suggestion that I know of. This is another browser that you can use if you want to go all out in privacy, mm-hmm. and that is the Tor browser.
Okay. Now,
Tor is well known because it lets you browse a kind of a different network using onion links, mm-hmm. Popularly called the dark web, if someone wants to sound spooky, you know.
Yeah, you're supposed to whisper when you say it, dark web. Yeah,
the dark web,
there you go.
Yeah, but the thing is, you can also use it just to browse the regular web as well. Uh-huh. Now it uses these special Tor nodes that are like servers that people can run. So your browsing using Tor might be slower than a normal browser.
Yeah.
But it will be more private.
Yeah. And it's like aggressively private, I would say, because it is a little slower, and it does rely on these completely anonymous servers that sort of come and go. They can be kind of ephemeral. There are some, like, I've seen them sort of come and go over time. You know, in all the time I spend on the dark web. We were talking about browsers on macOS. But I also want to point out, for people who maybe aren't jazzed about the Safari experience on their phones, if you run iOS, there is Chrome available for iOS, and you can set it as your default browser.
Yes, and so this feature was added to iOS 14. So if you have 14, then you'll be able to set a default browser. I think that I'm pretty sure that option only shows up once you have downloaded an external browser or a third-party browser, and then you should be able to find it somewhere in settings where that option will appear.
Yeah, there's a... I'm not going to recall where, so I'm going to talk about it for a minute while I try and tap through and see if I can find it in settings. But there's a place where you can set a default app, and you can have it be different than what Apple normally gives you, right? So if you have a different mail app that you like, or if you have a different browser that you like Chrome, or you want to use something else as the default app, you can do that. You can set those settings in iOS, and you can make it so that the one that you actually want to use works. And the reason we're pointing that out now is because there was a bug where you could make that choice and it wouldn't stick on your phone. And that's been fixed. So, in all the drum banging we did before about how you needed to update to the latest version of iOS immediately, when you did, this was a bonus thing that you got. Like, if you're on a very recent version of iOS 14, then you have the option to do this, and it will actually work for you. So if you tried it when you first installed iOS 14 and it didn't go well, it should go better now. So,
yeah.
That's why we want to talk about it. So we will have links to these browsers and more information about all of this in the show notes, as usual. So that's going to do it for us today. Please send us your questions and your observations on our observations. You can do that at observations@macobserver.com. I'm just trying to set a record for how many times I can say observations in the same sentence. So, Andrew, as always, thanks for coming by for Security Friday.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and have a great weekend, everyone.
Indeed, have a great weekend. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you on Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other, and let's be careful out there.